Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat podcast. I'm Sam Moores. And with us this week, we have Paul Woodman. Hello.
Hello, Sam.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Can you tell the audience a little bit about sort of a short summary of who you are and what you do?
So I am the founder of Love Cars. We are, well, for want of a better word, content creators, I guess, creating content, anything to do with cars from the sublime to the ridiculous. Started the company longer than I care to remember. 12 years ago, I used to work in tech, and I thought the world's crying out for an online automotive platform, a community of car lovers. So I set up lovecars.com. So it's a completely different business to what it is now. It's almost like a media business now. And we're just about to launch our second series of our TV show as well, which is very exciting. So we do a bit of everything, to yeah. say the least, but we're very niche now in content creation, and it's all about the cars.
It's interesting because I don't know when we first met or I first came across. It was a long time ago. Mm. And I was probably with Tim or something, and he was like, oh, this is Paul of Love Cars. And I was like, I don't know. This was a long time ago. And I was like, okay, hi. So you say you were working in tech. What were you doing before this?
Oh, really exciting stuff like VPNs and the hosting and sorts of, you know, incredibly dull, but it paid the bills and it was good. It was good money. My father always said that if you work for someone, you're never going to get rich. But I think it's the other way around, because when you start your own business, it's hellish. It's awful. It's completely different. Working for a corporate company, you know, every month you're going to get paid and you're going to, you can have holidays and sick pay and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I had a massive entrepreneurial streak in me. I wanted to do something for myself. I love cars. I had a tech background. So the two kind of went perfectly together, really, to set up this platform. And it did incredibly well. It did really well. I stuck a big chunk of money myself, got some investors as well. It did very well. In the first 24 hours, we had 75,000 people online, which was signed up, which is amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. And then at the time, it was only really Facebook and Instagram. Facebook and Twitter. Instagram only just started. And it was just so hard to get people on a daily basis.
Yeah.
We needed to do a big Series B raise, which we tried to do. And we had some Middle East money coming in, and we spent far too long chasing that money, and it never came in. And when you got hosting costs of sort of 10 grand a month, you got to make a decision. When you're not making any money, you're making zero revenue. It's different now that you look at the likes of CarWow, CarZoo, or we shouldn't mention CarZoo maybe because that's a bad example, but Cinch, a lot of these online platforms, they don't rely necessarily on money coming in. It's all about what the potential future may be.
Yeah, when you and so when you started off, because those are interesting ones to sort of look at, I think, when you go, how does car well? I think people just see the sort of YouTube channel, but obviously the website is the company.
It is.
And it funds all of the stuff we see. What was your plan going in? What was your, like, I've got this idea, I think this is going to work?
Just, we wanted to be a community of car lovers. We wanted people from all over the world, wherever you are, to congregate on this one single platform, lovecars.com. And if you've got an interest in a specific car or a number of cars, you can go on that page and you can talk about the car. It's a little bit like Piston Heads. Piston Heads, amazing.
Yeah.
Piston Heads have done this so well, the forums, and you can talk about from, you know, anything you want to talk about. But we wanted to do it in a bit of a nicer way, so a bit of a more user-friendly way, because the Piston Heads forum, I know Haymarket own it now, but it hasn't really changed in from when it was founded. It's amazing. It's brilliant. And the content on there is fantastic. But ours was visually, you know, aesthetically looked very good, and it was easy to use. And we encourage people to upload pictures of their cars. So, you know, your F40, you're very famous for having a blue F40. So people could talk about that. Or do I need to get my cats adjusted or new fuel tank? And so there's lots of those sort of things now. But we wanted to be all encompassing for all people. And we still have plans for it, to be honest with you, Sam. But other things, revenue generating business has taken over for now.
And then I think, and so what point in time did you start exploring the different avenues? Because I feel like early on, at least when I came across you or we met, you had always wanted to do TV shows. Has this been a particular sort of passion of yours, or was it just an avenue you thought, I think this is going to be a good model?
It's just pure luck, absolute pure luck. I don't think I've ever wanted to be in TV, really. I never wanted to be on television or anything like that. I never wanted to be in front of the camera. I had some people pushing really hard with Love Cars that you need to be the face, a bit like Matt is with Carwell. You need to get on camera. And this was the early days, because I had access through friends and contacts. I had access to pretty much anything going. It was crazy, really, the cars that I had access to back in the day.
I remember very early on seeing you pictures. I think you were in a Pagani or something. And there's a... I obviously had some friends at Pagani or something. I was like, how is he in a Pagani already? Like, he's got like 20 followers.
I know. Well, I mean, I've known the family. I've known the kids since they were
amazing,
knee high to grasshoppers. And I've known Horatio for over 20 years. So I'm super lucky with my contacts. And that's really ultimately why I ended up doing Love Cars. Because I thought, I've got all these contacts in the automotive world. I know the tech world really well. So it's a perfect pairing. But with all these things, you have this plan mapped out.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be brilliant. I'm going to have this plan. It's just going to be plain sailing the whole way. And if you've ever seen those graphs, those memes and those graphs for entrepreneurs, it goes up, down, and squiggle, round, backwards. And that's kind of my life, really. But it's been challenging. But I've done some amazing things and you know, met some amazing people as well. So I think ultimately, how do you measure success? And how do you, if you measure success in terms of monetary value, then I'm a massive failure because I'm poor. And Instagram versus reality, when you see someone driving in a Ferrari or a, you know, RS6 or something, you think, well, they've obviously done okay for themselves. But it's not like that. It really isn't. It is a true case financially of Instagram versus reality. And I'm not complaining, because, you know, it's amazing. I just got off a plane late last night, hence why I'm looking rather jaded. But and I've had so many flights this year already, and this industry is great, but I think it suits a younger person. So that's why we ultimately moved into the television, where we can do longer form, not the short form, where it's record, get on a plane, go and do the review, record it, upload it. So television kind of suits us a little bit better.
And at what point in time? Yeah, so what point in time did you start that? Because I know you were, I was looking back on the YouTube channel, and I think, I don't know where the first video was, like sort of 8 years ago, 7 years ago.
That's, was it? Wow.
Something like that.
It's all by chance. The whole thing was by chance. YouTube was by chance. We did a video for somebody, went to an event, and their presenter didn't turn up, and they asked if I would do something. And I said, no way, and I did it. And then, so it's by chance. And then I met an amazing man who's well-known in the industry, called Tom Keegan. He was Tom was one of the most talented videographers, cinematographers, directors, whatever you want to call him. He can script write and do everything. So, and then we started creating some videos for Love Cars for YouTube. Then Tiff came on board. Tiff Nadell came on board, did a couple of videos with us. And then we were just asked if, would you consider doing a TV show? Because Tiff was just kicked off Fifth Gear. Yeah. So he was available. And we said, yeah, why not? And so it's a combination. It's just one of those things that happened. It just happened. It wasn't planned. It just happened.
And it is, because that's it. I've always seen you, whenever I see you, you're with Tiff nowadays, like pretty much. You're like this little duo cruising around, driving cars sideways. And with Tiff, did you pitch him? Did you say, we just need a presenter? Will you come and be a presenter for a bit? Or did you say, hey, do you want to be part of this thing we're building from the early days?
We met on an event. We were driving down to the south of France with Formula One experiences, and amazing trip. Again, you know, one of these amazing trips that you get to go on that you've got to pinch yourself sometimes. And we met on that, and we just hit it off. So we ended up sort of sitting down, having dinner together. And then we ended up making a video, which we paid him for on YouTube. The first video we did with him was the trilogy of Rolls-Royce Black Badges. The first okay. anyone, you know, oh, this is a world exclusive. It's going to go crazy. I think we had about 20,000 views. But and then
that's good
we
the,
just hit it off as mates.
Good for the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's Tiff Nadell. So, you know, we were thinking it's going to blow up the internet. But, you know, but all these things have a bit of a shelf life. I'm sure we'll come on to Tiff in a moment, but he is so professional, got so much energy and so much passion. But yeah, we've all got a shelf life. But so we just hit it off, and we're mates. We're just mates having a bit of fun in cars, and that's all it is, and all it ever will be in terms of what we do together.
Yeah, no, it looks like you've had a lot of fun, and it's that point about getting to do cool stuff, I think, is it's what keeps me sort of doing these sort of things. I love having conversations with people and getting to meet new people and chatting about cars and stuff. But in reality now, I get to drive a lot of things. And the only other way you would get to drive a lot of things is having obscene amounts of money, or you get to do things that you can't buy. You couldn't
That's
really
true.
Pay for. But you get to do it because you're making a video or you're producing some content, etc. And it is work, but you get to do some unbelievable stuff.
This weekend coming, I can't go, sadly. And I'm really jealous that my colleague's going, but it's driving through the Sahara Desert. Through the Sahara Desert in an electric car. Yeah, it's pretty special. I'm not quite sure. I don't know whether it's under embargo, but yeah, that's going to be an amazing trip. You imagine doing something like that. That's something that you would plan for. I mean, they've got a whole team. These manufacturers that invite you on these events, they have a whole team that plan these things and brainstorm. Yeah. Where can we go? What can we do? Let's do something unique and something special. And you know, these are the type of things. You go to Bhutan and drive the Skoda Yeti, for example, or you go to Saudi Arabia to watch the Dakar Rally.
Yeah.
It's incredible, really.
But ultimately,
they're not doing it for nothing, because they want something in return. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Yeah. They want some good content, and they want to get the word out there. So which works well for both, I guess.
Have you found that balance tricky of going on, let's just say, in an ideal world where you get invited on every single press trip ever created, and you go, oh, yeah, okay, I'm getting flown business class to X nice hotel, we're going to do something for a day and then we're going to come back, or it might be multiple days, and I'm producing a video, but I'm not getting paid to go there. It's a cool experience, and then the video that comes out the other end, we've got to generate money from that somehow in whatever way it's funded. Have you found a sort of battle of like what we go and do, what we have to say no to, because it just doesn't work?
Well, it's not financially viable. I mean, so you think the big car companies are launching a new car every 2 or 3 weeks, which is just nuts when you consider that.
That is
if you accepted everything, you'd need a big old team to do that. I think for the guys like Joe Achilles, Petra Ped, Tim Schmee, I know Tim's got a big team behind him, so maybe it's a bad example because the other two kind of do most things themselves. But when they're filming themselves and they're uploading and they're editing themselves, it's very different. But Love Cars, we've always prided ourselves on the fact that we've done high quality. Theirs is high quality as well, but it's a different type of video, type of format that we've always done. But you just couldn't do everything. It'd be impossible. And ultimately, you want to make money. I think if you're a young person, you haven't got any children, you haven't, you want to travel the world, what an amazing thing to do. But it's all about paying the bills. And getting on business class flights to Saudi Arabia doesn't pay the bills, unless you can monetize the video, as you quite rightly said.
Yeah. And then you have to go, okay, well, what's the car? What's the experience? Mm.
How many other people are going to be doing
it? How many other people are doing it?
Look at the Vantage this week. Oh, it was just bing, 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 all the way down timelines. Is everybody doing the Vantage? So there's no benefit for us to go and do that. Absolutely no benefit whatsoever for us to do that. Because then Mr. JWW, Tim, Matt, all those guys are going to get the views, and we might get a few of the scraps at the end.
Yeah. It's definitely, that seems like a tricky sort of balance to pull. And I've noticed with creators, as they sort of go, the timeline of their experience goes along, they start off and are like, yes, you want to be invited to anything you get invited to, awesome, I'm going to go. And then then you start getting access to do other stuff, or you might have, you know, other things or other ways of doing it. And you go, okay, actually 2 days or 3 days to go and film in our world, let's say, some sort of very standard car, not a hypercar, not something that's really the internet what cares about. Right? Well, it's literally makes zero sense whatsoever. And then as you see people going up, they start to go, well, even with the crazy stuff, I will pre-record a video. And that's the dream, isn't it, for those launches, is at some point in time in the previous 2 months or whatever it is, you've gone and done a walk around or something of the car. So you've got the video to go out, but it's sort of on a reasonable schedule. It's in the UK. You can spend half a day doing it. And then, yes, you've got a video for that date, but you're not bundled into the 400 people in the same location, the same stuff. It's tricky, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It is tricky. It's all about balance, isn't it? Getting that balance right. Because some of the small cars do very well, but you need a bit of luck when it comes to those. And I think for me, ultimately, I'm a little bit selfish that because most things come through me or the guy that looks after our social media and emails, he'll send it to me first. And if it's a nice one, I'll say, I'm going to go on that. But I'm a little bit selfish. And to be honest with you, I go on the ones that are the most amazing experiences or that I really like the people. Or a combination of two. So it's, fairly normal. But I do spread the love a little bit throughout the team.
Have you got any favorite trips from the last couple of years?
Well, Saudi Dakar with Audi last year was incredible. It was just, I've always wanted to go to Dakar and then to go with Audi, an OEM or race team that were competing at the time. Of course, they won this year, but last year they didn't have too much luck. But that was really special. Gavin Ward and his team, they're brilliant fun to be around as well, which is for me one of the key things. If you go with a nice team, PR team, I was only talking about this last week with a PR team. If you go with a nice team, it's fun. You like hanging out with your mates and you're not getting paid ultimately, but you're hanging out with your mates, so it's much more pleasurable. The teams are important. How about you? What's your most memorable press trip?
I've not been on that many, but I did get to do I did a WRC trip with Toyota, which WRC is never going to do that well in terms of their views and whatever. But I'd got invited by them to go on something previously. And I'd it was that, as you were saying, I had a great time with the people. We went to Le Mans and I did it around a GR Yaris. That was the sort of thing. But I'd mentioned I'd never been to a WRC event. And then a couple of months later or 6 months later, they're like, Sam, do you want to come to Spain and go and watch some WRC? And it was awesome. Like I enjoy rallying, but I never really followed it that much. And then to do it, as you say, with an OEM where you go and you jump in a helicopter and you fly around and you drop in a stage and then you're in the pits and then you like go and have a nice lunch and then you jump back in the helicopter. It was an unbelievable experience, and you couldn't, I'm sure you could somehow pay for that, but like not really.
I think there are trips money can't buy. Corvette, Le Mans, similar. You know, you're in the pits, you're in the garage yeah. with the team. The car's coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning. You're there, and they're taking the wheels off, and the mechanics are running past you. I went on one in November, one of the most memorable as well. And people are going to be spitting at me on listening to this, but it was with Lamborghini, and it was all the four major Hurricanes: the SCO, the Strato. The four Hurricanes,
yeah.
convertible one, and it was driving around Italy, and it was properly driving around Tuscany, proper Lamborghini style, following one of their works drivers in a
nice.
Hurricane in a Urus Performante. It was unbelievable. It was it's a pinch me moment that you,
yeah.
and we had to film for it, but it was amazing. We're so lucky. But then you go to Italy and you drive a Fiat 500 electric, so it's the it's huge yeah. in terms of the difference, but you remember the special ones, of course.
And have you tailored this sort of, obviously the ones you go on, but who is your audience? Do you I know it's quite actually difficult to say like who is my audience, because some videos do well, some don't, but like, do you have an idea of who is what they like?
You know, that's such a good question, and we need to. So, look at Mr. Beast. They're so analytical. They analyze what's going to do well, what my audience is, yeah, and they really focus on that. We're not like that. We're much more scattergun. We just want to get loads of cool car content out there. Ultimately, our audience. So, if you go on the demographic of YouTube, so for those of you who don't know, you can go onto YouTube Studio and you can look at your demographic and all your analytics. And ours is, we've got as you would imagine with myself and Tiff predominantly, we've got quite a high age range, mostly men. And I think it's 35 to 45 maybe or something like that.
Yeah.
UK first, USA. But I think ultimately what the good guys do, the Tims, the Joe Achilles, what the good guys do is they really interact and they build their community, and we haven't done that very well. We've just sort of been a bit scattergun, and hopefully you'll follow our journey. Johnny Smith, look at Johnny Smith, you know, his core audience,
yeah.
it really engages with them. And you know what Johnny Smith's going to deliver. You don't really know what we're going to deliver. One day it might be, as I said, the Fiat 500 electric. Next day it might be a, you know, Pagani Huayra BC. So that's a very, very good point. We probably should at some point analyze it. But then it goes on to the television, which we're doing much more of now. We are going to get a lot more content back on our YouTube channel. We've got loads of videos ready to go on. But the TV, we actually want that. We want to have a bit of everything. We don't just want to have the supercar genre or the
yeah.
electric genre. Fifth Gear has gone down the... I know it's down to sponsors and I know it's hard, but Fifth Gear... it's all about electric cars. And certain people want electric cars. Great. But we've got over 50 cars on series two of the show. Same with series one. We had over 50 cars.
Yeah.
And there's everything from McLaren Speedtails and Bugatti Chirons to a 2011 Citroen C3 and everything in between. It sounds so cheesy, but there is genuinely something for everybody.
Yeah. And I guess that's you can always look at Top Gear as the sort of, you know, the pinnacle of the space.
Of course, everybody does.
And you go like, it started off as a niche sort of nerdy show, and then it's expanded into this show that everyone watches. Like, you know, entire families will watch. And I think for the sort of car nerd, that can be quite challenging, because you go, oh yeah, but I would rather have, like, I don't know, like now, just Chris Harris going around a track, dissecting what the rear dampers are like. You know, that's the sort of stuff that I would, if you could just show me that, I would watch a lot of that. But it is a wider entertainment, and ultimately I guess you're trying to sell to a bigger audience when you're creating a TV show. How did the TV shows in theory start coming about, and how does that work? Like, did you film an entire series? How does that whole process work?
Yeah, the first show we were commissioned to make it. So we're on ITV for the first show in the UK and National Geographic in Japan. There are two big channels for series one. It's in lots of other countries as well, South Africa, Romania, Poland, and so on. But they were our two big channels. We never got into USA or Canada or Australia, but now actually with series two, we will be, which is great, on the Amazon platform, which is absolutely fantastic. And we filmed the whole series. So we had to film 6 one-hour episodes and deliver it all at the same time. And what we did, it's almost a bit, you mentioned Top Gear. It's almost a bit like Top Gear back in the day when the entertainment value just came in. So it wasn't just all about cars and, oh, this is a tire on a car and this is the steering wheel. So Top Gear wasn't like that, but
I know what you mean.
But it's, so our show is a bit of an old school Top Gear review show, really, where you've got the cars, but you're having a bit of fun and you can see the presenters are enjoying it and trying to put you behind the wheel of the car. But we had to film, and we broke it down conveniently into lots of different items. So instead of there just being a one item show with two or three cars driving across a desert or something, we broke it down. So it's much more of a review show, and that's and we've maintained that format throughout series two as well.
And then I guess with Tiff, like the first time I met Tiff, I can't remember when it was, but we was at some media thing, and I was chatting to, it was probably you guys like beforehand, and then you see the camera turn on, and this is when I was like, oh, hang on a minute, this guy is like a professional presenter, like he does this role down to a T, and Tiff like turns on and it's like, oh,
it's
my god, it's actually unbelievable.
It is. He can be a really grumpy old bugger. And then as soon as the camera's on, he is amazing. Oh, hello, everybody. Yes, Tiff Nadell. We're loving to meet you. But he is something else. Honestly, I find it very difficult. I've never done any acting or presenting or anything like that. Tiff, learning lines is one thing. And I've always got a million things on. We're talking our TV show is super low budget. So I'm booking hotels and restaurants and where's the crew going and trying to write some lines. Whereas Tiff is the professional and he just gets the script. And that's all he's got to worry about. He just turns up and says the words and looks good. But he can do a whole A4. If anyone's ever tried this, you should try it. So imagine having an A4 piece of paper with, I don't know, 11 font size.
Yeah.
He can do a whole read of that A4 in one go, in one take, and nail it as if he's known it forever. 10 minutes later, he would have forgotten it. Once he's delivered it, and he's forgotten it. But it is the Alexander Legis, she's on the show as well. She presents with Rory on Auto Trader. She's the same. They are unbelievable. I don't know how they do it, but their brains are wired up differently to me. I've got like this tiny little goldfish brain. But they could, you imagine reading a whole A4 page, but not just reading it, not just reciting the words, but actually doing it as if they're believable and you know what they're saying, and virtually word for word. It's some talent, I tell you. And sadly, I haven't got that. I can barely remember one line at a time, but that lends itself to what we do because it's not that often we're doing big scripts. It's more a couple of lads having fun or with the girls or whatever it may be, just having some fun and having a bit of banter and a chat like we are now.
And that is interesting because that's, I think, a lot of content creators, myself, when I've made videos, I've never really tried to script anything. I've sort of might have a vague, some points I want to cover or something like that. But I've massively, one, I think probably avoided the, well, yeah, if I wrote it down and had to learn it, I'm not going to be able to deliver that. Like it's not going to be authentic. So it's very hit and miss. And you see that from, I think, a lot of creators that's one skill that I've seen. Let's say someone like Tim.
Look at Chris Harris. Sorry.
No, carry on.
Chris Harris, without question, the best. I have Tiff, Jeremy Clarks, and all these people in incredibly high regard. But the best reviewer of a car at the moment is Chris Harris. He is 100%. But you look at some of the Top Gear things where you had to do words to present, and he was very average. But he is just the best there is in terms of getting behind a car And I know lots of people that work with him, and they say it's one take. He'll go out one time, just an exceptional talent. But as soon as you give him words, you know, it's, you know, straight away. And it was, that's why a lot of it was a little bit wooden, that sort of the presenting in the studio with Top Gear and stuff. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't like, oh, he's awful, he doesn't know what he's doing. But the difference is just vast.
Yeah, and it's that's one thing. It's like, he is a professional and has a huge skill set in getting in a car, driving it sideways, and at the same time delivering sort of off the car. I don't know how his sort of process works, but, you know, a great bit of chat about that car that feels really authentic. To take you into a studio and be working off a script and all this sort of stuff, there's just a completely different environment, and it's a skill set you have to build. And he's definitely got much better at it throughout the shows, and I don't really sort of think of it as so much. I remember those early days going like, oh, this looks painful, like it looks hard.
But it was all a bit awkward those early days, wasn't it? You remember Chris Evans?
Yeah,
I rate Rory massively as well. I thought Rory was very good in it, but the Formula One guy as well, Eddie Jordan.
Yeah,
you know, it's all a bit weird back in those early days.
But it's interesting though, isn't it? Because you're now on TV, and being in the sort of making YouTube videos for a long time. Like, being on camera is a weird thing, and to not look weird is surprisingly hard. Like,
you know what we do? We do one of the ways that we make money and we pay our bills is we film for some manufacturers. So we film for, you know, we're super lucky with certainly one of our clients is just one of the most amazing OEMs in the world. It's probably one of the best known brands in the world. But the amount of people, product specialists or senior management, and not just them, whoever it is, they know their subject matter incredibly well. They're very confident, good at articulating, communicating. The moment you turn a camera on, it is different. And just little things like when a camera's on you and someone says walk from there to there, you're like, how do I walk here? And,
yeah.
And you learn, I think you learn, the more you do it, the better you become, of course, as we just mentioned with Chris Harris. But it is weird when you do turn the camera on, you're right.
And you see stuff. I know from sort of like looking back at early days of I used to do a lot of skiing, and we used to film ourselves skiing and trying to do tricks and stuff like that, and you'd start looking at it and going like, what am I doing with my arms? Like, what's going on here? Like, and your perception versus the reality is so wrong. And it's the same in this sort of, you know, filming. I early days, and I still get it told off for doing it now, if you're holding a camera and you're filming yourself, if you move too much, it's like really quite stressful to watch. But you, because you're not watching the video as you're filming it, you're just like involved in doing it, and it can be incredibly annoying. But yeah, it's definitely, the more you do, the better you get, like, for sure.
You see, you're very calm and laid back, got this lovely relaxing voice, and I'm a bit more enthusiastically excitable, and so my hands are always going around all over the place. I just think, be yourself, really. And that's personally, and you know, this is not an expert, a bit of advice, but my personal advice would be just be yourself, and whatever feels natural, do it, because you are never, ever going to please everybody on the internet.
No.
If you drive a black car, they'll say they want a red car. If you drive in the rain, they'll say, why are you doing that? You know, I want sunshine, and vice versa. So you just be yourself. It would be my advice when you are on camera. And I know it's harder, easier said than done, because like we just said, as soon as you switch camera on, it's completely different.
Or you have to be yourself, but like, I find that the podcast format, I think I pretty much am myself, pretty much. But on camera, you kind of have to be about like plus 10%. You do have to be a little bit more than your normal, because otherwise,
crack it up a notch.
You just look really, really dull. Whereas in person, it wouldn't feel like that, because you're just a person talking about stuff and doing things.
I'll tell you who's a good presenter. He's been on your show, Petrol Ped. He's one of those naturally good presenters. He could do live stuff. David Green, I love, who does all the festival speed stuff with Nikki.
Now,
Nikki Shields.
I'd say natural presenter. petrol pad, Pete, is really good. But his day job before, he might now be full-time, was presenting, I think it was technology seminars and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's had a long history of presenting and being, you know, being building up that skill of doing that. So when he starts doing his camera stuff, it's come across straight away. Like he has a very good way of delivering information and stuff. But yeah, if you didn't know that around, you'd be like, oh, he's just naturally like done that. No, it has taken years and years and years. So you've put together this series. So the first one, what's it called? Love Cars on the Road.
On the Road. Yep.
On the Road. They approached you and said, will you do this?
Yeah. And then we were asked to make a second one, which is already live in Japan, actually, on National Geographic. So they commissioned we were expecting just to go straight back on to ITV. So we go through a distributor, one of the biggest in the world, and they're amazing as well. They're called Banijay, very well known. And we just assume we're going to go back onto ITV. And for monetary reasons, we couldn't conclude a deal. It wasn't us. It was through our distributor. We were just delighted to be on there. They were actually going to put three series on. I don't know whether this had any correlation to Top Gear being taken off, but they're actually going to put three series on ITV one and three series on ITV four, which is where we live for series one. And we were like, yes, this is jackpot. This is amazing. And contract negotiations fell through, sadly. And we were, you know, a bit miffed, to be honest with you, because we wanted to be on there. It's a big platform for us in the UK with, you know, British presenters. Ultimately, the show's based out of the UK. But it's funny with these things when you're a bit miffed, and then all of a sudden the Amazon deal came along, and it was like, this is amazing. We're on one of the biggest streaming platforms in the world. You know, this is just incredible. A real pinch me moment. But it was only through Banijay that got us onto Amazon, because they're constantly they're pushing you to all these different channels. And that's why it's only available to start off with in five regions, the five big regions: UK, USA, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Because it's already live in quite a few countries, such as South Africa, Japan, etc. So, but then series three, which we're going to start making, series three will be exclusively on Prime. So,
cool.
Yeah, so it's good.
And does that, like, when you end up on a, let's say you get on ITV4, is that like, oh, sweet, everything's like paid for now, we're actually making like good money out of the back of this? Or is it like, oh, that's like okay, but like and then Prime cha-ching? Or is it like a sort of is it like a sort of slow ramp?
Well, Prime was cha-ching, which was amazing. Nice. We really needed it. But so with an indie, as independent TV maker producers as we are, so if you get commissioned, typically, the channel will give you a big chunk of money to make this show. But if you make it yourself and then sell it, then everything is back ended. So it's but everybody thinks TV, oh, loads of money. It's you know, we've made it. We're going to be on TV. It doesn't quite work that way. But the Amazon deal is amazing for us in terms of what it does for us in terms of credibility,
100%.
You know, all over the world as well, ultimately, and financially as well. So, but you don't, because it wasn't a commission thing initially from Amazon, because they've only just purchased it. So you're out of pocket for a long time when you're making this. So it's very different to if you're actually commissioned directly. But then don't forget, if you're commissioned directly from a channel in the UK, it's not like you're getting millions in the bank, because the UK channel will pay you X, and then the Japan channel will pay you Y, and then they all pay you little dribs and drabs.
Yeah.
So when you get your royalty checks through each quarter, sometimes you're like, oh, I can't even buy a cup of coffee. And then other times you think, wow, this is amazing. I can pay my bills and we can, you know, we can splash out on some pasta or something.
Yeah, because I think I definitely had this, what turned out to be an illusion, that Anyone that was on TV was making loads of money. And I don't know whether you've read Chris Harris's book. Have you read Chris Harris's book?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Anyway. No. And I think he brought up this topic and he was saying, like, he got on Top Gear and he got a pretty rubbish deal for the first year or 2 years or whatever. And I think it's got better. And then obviously it's ended. But people suddenly come up to you and go like, oh, well, you must be earning, like, they sort of assume you're suddenly earning loads and loads and loads and loads of money because you're being a paid personality on TV. When in reality, there are people that are making lots of money, but just because you're on TV doesn't mean you're making lots of money. And I always thought, like, let's say with like Fifth Gear and whatever, first time I met Tiff, I was like, he was presenting on for something. It was like a BMW event. And I was kind of like, why are you here? I don't understand. What's going on? Surely you made loads of money off the back of this stuff and you're now just sort of like set for life. But it sounds like it's actually like it is a hard continual graft.
I think any business is, and you're right about TV, the illusion that everyone's going to be rolling around in money. And don't forget, we've still got investors from when we started. So they're all looking for a return on their investment. Yeah. And we certainly want to give them a return on their investment as well. So it's not like, you know, we just got this big stash and we're just putting it in our back pocket and buying Ferraris, sadly. But I don't know whether I can say too much, but there are a few very large streaming companies. We're on one of them.
Yeah.
And we've just concluded a deal to go on another one. Nice. Completely different show, travel entertainment show. I don't want to kind of detract from the amazing achievement of getting onto Prime Video, which is, you know, we're super proud of. But watch your space, because there's it's quite funny, this industry. So I'm super proud and happy of everybody. If everybody achieves something, Rory gets 1 million viewers. Well done, Rory. Yeah. I put it on my story, and I don't really like social media that much anyway. Same with Matt, you know, 3 million subscribers. Yeah. And anyone that achieves something, I'm super confident. But it's funny, there's a bit of jealousy around this industry, and it's a real shame, because I just want everybody to succeed. Yeah. And I think if people knew our journey, hopefully maybe this will explain it a little bit through this podcast, so thanks for the opportunity. But if people knew, my goodness, there's peace and struggles to sleepless nights, I cannot tell you. And everybody's saying, oh, the violins are out. Yeah. It has been a monumental struggle. I wish we didn't do the tech company and the media company together. I wish we separated that, because it's causing all sorts of problems. It's not easy. It's really hard. But there's been some amazing memories along the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it does, like, you're taking a lot of, you have to take a lot of risk, especially with producing, you know, a bunch of episodes before you getting paid, before someone's accepted it and whatever. And I'm sure there are benefits. Like, I'm sure there are benefits to, I've produced this, do you want to buy it? You're probably going to pay a bit more. If assumed the perceived value is the same, like, you're going to pay more if it's just ready to go. Then, like, okay, we've got to wait 2 years and we'll give you some money now. And but at the same time, you are front loading all the risk. You're every single hotel, every single flight, like, recording stuff.
We did get money up front. So we got money up front for both series. So which is great, because we couldn't have done it without that commitment. And for series three, we're talking to a couple of OEMs about some sponsorship, which ultimately will, the budget. So when you put this into perspective, and we are super proud of our production. Please watch it if you get a chance to watch it. But anyone listening, but in terms of the likes of Top Gear, who ultimately is a benchmark for any car review show, we would spend our entire 6 hour series, so 6 1-hour episodes. The total budget would be 5 minutes of Top Gear. 5 minutes of Top
Gear
would be the equivalent. It is insane, the difference. So we would often film an item, a 6 minute item with one person. So no sound man, you know, there's one cameraman doing the filming and one presenter. Often, because that's what you do with low budget stuff. So 5 minutes of Top Gear, effectively, so roundabout, maybe it's 10 minutes on a bad day, maybe it's 3 minutes on a good day, or vice versa, but would be our entire budget for our entire series, 6 hours.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. But it's a law of diminishing returns, because because it's not that it's a vast difference in terms of budget, but when you watch the productions, you won't think, oh, that's Top Gear is so much better in terms of production. It is, but it's not that much better.
But it's the marginal gains of all of that stuff. And it's, I find it amazing now what people put out with, like say, like what you guys put out with one person, or whether it's like Henry Catchpole for, he's now on
amazing.
But like, it's just like amazing. And Rory, he's like, there's two of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Rory will go with one guy and, with George mainly or whoever, and the stuff that they're creating, because he's a good writer as well, good presenter, brilliant.
He's done some really good stuff.
Yeah.
And when you watch it being filmed, it's kind of funny.
but I put something on. I really don't like social media. I really don't like being in front of the camera. I'm quite shy actually. And everyone thinks confident and everything's really great, but it's not like that at all. But I put something on our social media. I've been doing the socials, helping Phil, who does them normally, this week, because of course tomorrow is, or Friday is, prime day for us with a new series. And I put something on there, but I meant it from the heart. And I just said, you only see the presenters, but actually if without the team behind it, we'd have nothing. We'd have absolutely nothing. And my son is only 12, but he loves working in production. He does the lighting for his school and for various different productions. And he works his socks off. He works so hard. And of course, when it's all the accolades, the cast come out and they're bowing on the stage and they got the standing ovation and he's up there and he's going to be packing away until midnight and then coming home and I'm packing away and stuff. So it's the people behind it that really, really make it and make you look good and sound good.
Yeah.
Which is hard with me. Easy with Tim.
That was, I've sort of stopped doing the video side of this podcast when I'm out and about just for a bit, because it just gets too much. Like, if you're in front of the camera, that's one job. And it's like, let's say you're TIFF professional of, I know what I'm going to be talking about. I'm coming and I'm doing that. You've got a bit more, you've got more stuff going on, logistics and stuff like that. When you're like a one-man band and you're like, right, okay, I've got to set up lights. I've got to do the microphones. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. Make sure everything's recording, all the sound. And then you sit down and you're like, and now I've got to give a really nice interview. Like, it's quite a lot.
But the people listening are going to think we're complaining. I'm not complaining.
Oh, no.
I'm absolutely the opposite. The things that we've done and we do are amazing. And I'm super, super proud. But it like any job, if you want to be successful, it's hard. It's unusual that you're successful having a nice easy road in life.
Let's talk about some of the fun things in the new series. Have you got any sort of standout things you got to do or that you put together that you're like, that those were particularly strong and entertaining?
I mentioned the Citroen C3. I love it. It's my favorite item on the show, and that was one guy one day filming that item. I went and did and watched the wrap up on the runway, and it was just the honest story is we ran out of money and we needed another like 15 minutes of TV. So we're scraping around, what can we do, where can we go, and we had to do it quickly as well, because then this deal came in. It's like, wow, we've got to get this, we've got to get it uploaded. So I was thinking, what cars have the crew got? What have I got? What can we use? And one of the crew had a 2011 Citroen C3, and it's a little bit quirky. I was in it a couple of times. It's a bit quirky. The windscreen goes all the way back. It's sort of like a domed windscreen, and it's just a bit of a quirky car. Typical sort of French from that era, I guess. And came up with him with an idea, because he sings in a band as well, and some of his friends are in a band, and we end up picking them up. Connell Kelly, his name is, him and his band, we pick him up and take him to film a music video, and he's expecting a Lamborghini or something really exciting, and it's a Citroen C3, and it's such a wonderful little story. I really like it. But then of course you're drawn to the amazing cars, the Ferraris, the supercars, and some friends of ours over in America called the Triple F Collection. They do a YouTube channel, and they've got everything.
They have got everything,
lads. What do you want to drive? Drive whatever you want. Film whatever you want. They're all yours. So we did a lovely item It was like a real world test, you know, checking the boots of McLaren Speedtail, Bugatti Chiron, and a Pagani Huayra BC. And instead of taking them on the track and going sideways, we just drove them through the streets, the normal roads, and what do they like to park. And so that's a nice little item as well. That's one of my
Which was the most practical of those?
None of them. None of them. Which would you want to drive every day? None of them. And they're not practical. They've got no boot space. And well, they have got a boot space, but you'll see if you watch the show. But none of them. You wouldn't want to drive any of them, really. The Bugatti is super easy to drive. I thought the McLaren was super. I was really impressed with that Speedtail. I didn't particularly like it until I saw it in the flesh, and it's like, whoa, this is special. There was something really special about that.
It's a funny car. It's a funny car, that one. I think when it came out, I was kind of like, so what? Like, you've done another special edition kind of thing. And then I saw one, I think, in the flesh for the first time a year ago, 2 years ago at some concourse event, I think in London. And I was like, oh, no, hang on. This looks quite cool. And then you're like, oh, it's got three seats. That's a different. The three-seat experience is so much fun. So much fun. Did you find that? I saw you guys did a three up in it.
Yeah, we did. One of the guys that he doesn't work there anymore, but he was helping look after the collection, Brett. And we wanted to demonstrate this, the three seater. So he was driving the car. Yeah, amazing. But yeah, I drove the Speedtail that I've never known hosts like it. They are the most amazing guys. They're so passionate about cars. And like you said, they've got everything you can imagine. Certainly all the hypercars anyway. Cool guys though.
Yeah.
We did two items with them. Another one, I popped my cherry of jumping something. I jumped in a big 6x6 truck. They're just, and this is in their back garden. They got to jump in their back garden.
They
were really good fun.
One end of the spectrum to the other. Is filming in America different to filming in the UK?
No, so there's a lot of...
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot of things that come with filming, wherever you are. So you're supposed to get permits and all these sort of things, even if you film around your local streets.
Yeah.
But sometimes forgiveness is even easier to get than permission. But so we would, if we go into a city, we would always get a permit filming for a day just so we've got it, because they're so inexpensive. So if we go into Bristol, we're close to Bristol, we go filming in Bristol for a day. I think it's like 50 quid or 100 quid. It's next to nothing. So we'd be silly not to have that. And then for our due diligence, for our compliance, everything's just
ticked off.
The same if you go and film outside of a hotel or something. Molly's Diner, for example, we filmed outside there, one of the items. We just had to make sure that they signed a waiver to say that we could film there. They gave us a very nice burger and chips as well. So that's a nice plug for Molly's Diner.
Yeah, nice.
Maybe we'll get another £10 burger and chips. But it is complex. And if you film overseas, you've got carnets and all that sort of stuff as well that you need to fill out when you take equipment in there. So it is a little bit more challenging, but it was all fairly straightforward, really.
Yeah, because that's got, I think with Europe, it's got much more complicated in the last, whenever it was, since Brexit, basically.
Brexit, baby.
I've whenever I'm abroad now, unless it's something really major, I'm on holiday. I can't be dealing with. I'm all over my camera, and if I take pictures, and it's definitely a gray area if you're a content creator, because like you could well be a holiday, like going to drive a Lamborghini somewhere. You're not getting paid, so you're just having a good time. And filming some stuff.
Yeah,
the same.
I think that's unofficially. I'm not
yeah, of course,
endorsing anything, but I would certainly say, yeah, I'm on holiday. But yeah, but for you don't need that much equipment to do really good high quality television, unless you're going up the next level to 8K or something, and then you've got to film on these ARRIs and REDs and all these special cameras. But so many cameras now, the DSLRs are so good for. It looks like an enthusiastic amateur's setup. It doesn't look like a professional setup, but then you've got rigs and. But I love driving. I adore driving. So any opportunity filming in Europe, the crew will often fly, and I'll just drive over.
I love
driving. And people think I'm mad. I'll drive, and I won't listen to music or a podcast or anything. I'm just in my thoughts, and I'm quite creative. So I'll be thinking of what can we do, what stories can we do, what little things can we do, and I'll leave myself some voice notes. I will listen to the radio, I will listen to podcasts, but I can go hours without having anything on, which is a bit weird, really.
That is unusual, even on a motorway.
Especially on a motorway. My brain's always going 1,000 miles an hour, always. I find it hard to sleep. I just my brain is always going crazy, so I just find driving my therapy. I absolutely love it. Walking and driving, two of my two favorite things in terms of, for me, I'm not, yeah, not mental health or anything like that, but for me, if I want to chill out, go for a walk or go for a drive, and on the motorway, I really find it quite therapeutic.
Nice. Top three cars you've driven in the last 5 years.
I love Pagani. I'm so lucky. I've done, I dread to think, 10,000, maybe 15,000 miles in different Paganis. The Zonda Cinque Roadster, my favorite car of all time.
It's on my list, too.
Yeah, just such a super, super, super special car. I'm a big fan of Ferraris. I'll tell you what I did love, the Huracan STO, which I've driven a few times, but driving it through Italy the last time, it's on the show as well, funny enough, with Vicky Pirios, who's an Italian race driver who is brilliant. So her and I do a show, her and I drive it in Italy on the show. But I didn't really appreciate how bloody amazing that was as a driver's car until I went on this trip in November with Lamborghini.
Yeah.
So that would be up there. So I was just going to say, you don't have to spend millions to have fun, but you're still spending a few hundred grand on an STO. So I'm going to come down right down the scale. So that's my second choice, not in order. But my right up there to show that you don't need to spend millions will be a Caterham. I've had some of the most fun times and most amazing experiences in a Caterham. I was their media driver for a couple of years. Absolutely brilliant. And, you know, you got no ABS, of course, no power steering, nothing like that. It's just you in the car. It's just such an amazing experience. I really recommend and encourage anyone that hasn't driven a Caterham just to do it. And they do, you can hire them for the weekend from Caterham, I think, or from Williams or from lots of the dealers. Brilliant, brilliant fun. And you don't need to be on a track. There's something else on a track as well. But
yeah,
so very long-winded answer for your
small
question.
Back roads in a Caterham. Like I've had one of my, it's probably top three, but easily top five memorable drives was in a 310R. In the wet, on some small roads, just the most fun. The most fun.
It doesn't need to be the 310 or the 420 or the 620.
No, not at all.
This is a bog standard Caterham.
Lot of power. Like it had way more than I needed, especially in that scenario. And I guess one of the things you've been able to do, and there's a few cups behind you. You've done some Caterham racing.
Yeah, I was so lucky. Did two seasons with them. And I'm going to do some more this year, but that's for the TV show, for the Series 3. So it's a good excuse to be able to get out there.
Yeah.
That's a minefield as well. Just trying to get some sponsorship for it as well. Because I thought, oh, yeah, no problem at all. But just tell people what's going on. prime and, you know, up to 200 million people. And it's also going to be on social media and on Caterham.
Yeah.
Oh, getting sponsorships hard. These people that do it every year, every season, professional drivers, my hat's off to them. So I'm going to do some more this year. It was, if you have the opportunity, so it's called the Caterham. You start off in the academy if you've never done any racing before, which is supposed to be for all novices. It's not. Some people are quite serious about it. Yeah. They buy cars, they do loads of testing, which I think they shouldn't allow, by the way. And then you go through the stages and you go right the way through. So I'm going to do a little bit of the third stage up this year. So I'm looking forward to it. You should do one. Definitely. You would love it.
I've not raced Caterham. I've raced some Radicals. I still have a Radical, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. Those cars. If Caterham wants to put me in a Caterham, I'll 100%. I'll come and do some racing.
The Caterham, take note.
the sponsorship side of it. I look at people that sponsor cars, and a lot of people that you will see that racing GT3 or something like that. Is their company, or it's their mate's company, or it's 100%. Very similar. Yeah. It's like, or it's the son and the dad loves racing and the son's driving. Like, that seems to be it, because the amount of money involved versus the theoretical eyeballs. And I think people do it for all sorts of reasons as well. I know people do it as like a business building exercise. You see that a lot with some of the Ferrari stuff. The Corsa Cliente stuff, where someone is going racing, or maybe it might be endurance racing legends or something like that. If you get a car on the grid, you go and sit down to lunch with the other people on the grid. And if it's Tor Auto or those Peter Auto events, you've got a lot of billionaires. And so it's
opens up
a lot of doors. But yeah, I have a lot of respect for anyone that manages to pull together sponsorship kind of from, like, you know, nothing as such, because it looks hard.
Yeah, and haven't really tried. I just reached out to a few brands that I love, and ultimately don't even get a response, which is, it's a brutal market. But there's got to be something in it for them. And don't forget as well how the world's moving with everyone wants to be carbon zero and net zero and all that sort of stuff. So sponsoring a little Caterham that pumps out a load of CO2 is probably not what a lot of people want. But the there is something on the back of it, because you turn it around and you make a story out of it. And for example, I have got a sponsor called Dubon Trailers, who a lot of people don't know of because you think of Brian James. And they make amazing trailers. And so we're going to make a whole story about it where we can include them and we can pick it up and show them how it's built in the factory. So, yeah, so I think as long as any partnership has got to be right for both parties. If only you're benefiting or I'm benefiting, it's not a partnership. So in terms of any sponsorship, for me, you've got to give everybody's got to be happy with what they're getting. And you know the old cliche of, under deliver and over promise. That's hopefully what we're going to do with these guys and anyone else who comes on board.
Under promise, over deliver. But yeah,
what did I say?
You said it the other way around.
That's my motto. I also buy high and sell low.
yeah, that's another good one. Yeah, that is a really valid point that I'm learning slowly and trying to get. It's like building the value proposition for the person you're asking for something from. Like, if it's got to be worth more to them than to you, really, basically. And
100%.
And if you can build that and showcase that, then, you know, if you can prove or at least reasonably say, I'm going to bring you more value than this is going to cost, then it's a no-brainer of a decision. But I think a lot of people, early on, you just go, hey, can I have this? And they go, no. And you're like, oh, why not? You know, that's not going to help.
Yeah, don't take it personally. We've been offered money from brands that we don't want to work with, and you know, they don't even need to go down that wormhole. But again, because it's going on Prime Video, so we it needs to be the right brand for us. It can't just be anything. But watch your space. We've got a few irons in the fire, so watch your space. But if anyone wants to sponsor a nice little race team, come and meet Tiff get in touch. Details below.
It's an interesting one looking at racing and sort of green side. I'm not going to say the green side of racing because I don't necessarily think any racing can really be green. But it's an interesting... I was talking to someone yesterday about F1 and we were talking about how it started off talking about a Hamilton situation, which is an interesting development this in the last 2 weeks or so. I'm not 100% sure where this is going to go out. Won't be that long, but so it will have been news for a while, you know, moving to Ferrari at some point. And not that soon, but a couple of years down the line. We then got on to the new regulations and how can you remember what's changing in 2025? Is that the next new car?
Yeah. I do a podcast even with Tiff every week throughout the motorsport calendar. And I don't know. So he's going to kill me. but apparently they're going to be competitive, but I don't know. I hope it's going to be competitive this year. Wouldn't it be amazing if McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull are all there and thereabouts, and then it's not just about the car. That would be amazing. But sadly, I think it's all going to be Red Bull again, isn't it, Max?
Yeah, it's just going to be the Max show. And he's
he's
clearly bloody good. And the car's clearly really fast.
He's a phenomenal talent. He's a phenomenal talent. I just wish there's someone else that was a phenomenal talent next to him. A Lando Norris, for example, or a Alex Albon, and not a Perez, not a Checo Perez.
Who would you like to see end up in the Mercedes spot?
Well, very good question. I would like one of the young guys come through from F2.
That would be
cool. There's some super talented guys. I don't think Bottas should be in Formula 1. Ricciardo, I love him. Hülkenberg. Magnussen, get rid of them. Get the young people through. They're just journeymen. But it's such a... anyone that's watched Drive to Survive will know this anyway, but one crash can cost them $1 million. So they think by going with the steady old hands is going to be a much safer option for them. But I think some of these young kids, get them in Formula 1 and give them an opportunity.
Yeah. It's tricky. It must be so hard running that management situation, because you do look at these people and you go like, you're not doing that well. They are still phenomenal drivers.
Of course they are.
I'd love to see Lando move to Mercedes. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But for me, that would be like a George and Lando combo would be pretty sweet. On the sort of green side, we were talking about this and we were like, I don't know why they keep trying to make these cars more eco. Like, can we just acknowledge that F1 itself is sort of the problem, not the cars? So focus on, I don't know, not flying 100 crates around the world once a week, or align your calendar slightly better somehow so that you're not doing Australia, Canada, Canada, back to somewhere down there. And let the cars be V10s. Let them run rev to like 15,000 RPM or something. Like, the fuel they use is not making a difference.
Oh, there's a whole podcast that we could talk about on Formula One, but for me, lighter and smaller, simple. The engine, a V10 would be amazing, but if they're lighter and smaller, we got a different series. They're too big, too technical. But don't get me started on Formula One, because I think a lot of fans, Formula One fans, I've been a Formula One fan my whole life, and lots of the proper racing fans are just so cheesed off. You're going from, the iconic tracks to street tracks with Barcelona to Madrid. It's all about entertainment now, so don't get me started on that one. And for those of you watching, by the way, it looks like I've got this glowing face, but the sun, for once in the UK, is actually beating in. I don't normally need to put the blind down in my house, but the sun is absolutely belting in here. So it's a lovely day.
You're probably slowly cooking.
I am, actually.
have you chucked any something that seems to do well on YouTube, and I think you guys sort of capitalized on this, was is drag races. Drag races, I mean, that built the Love Cars channel. Have you got any drag races in the new series?
Yeah, we've got loads of drag races. Do you know what? I don't want to give too much away, but I didn't lose a drag race or a circuit thing in series one. And I don't do very well in series two in terms of drag races. But we Carl, wow, amazing. I love Matt. I love the team. I know lots of the guys there. Amazing what they do with their drag races. So we thought, if Carl Wow can do it, we can do it. We're always doing drag races anyway. So we thought, instead of doing 3, 2, 1, go, and then you know when the start is, you know, we thought, great, we've got a much better format. Let's do real world drag races. This is the format that everyone's going to love. So you pull up to the traffic lights, you know, you give it a little side eye to Sam and his RS3 or whatever he is, and you're in your Puma ST, and you give the side eye and you start revving. You don't know when the traffic lights are going to go. So this for us was we're going to hit on something massive. We're going to break the internet. And we did. We called in this car club, and they brought a load of different members, and we just matched up cars that we thought were very similar in terms of speed. And then what we found is you'd have one driver, you know, maybe an elderly driver, it could have been a young driver, but one driver in the faster car wouldn't even accelerate, or wouldn't be in sport mode, or wouldn't be in launch control, or miss launch control. So these drag races are the most bizarre thing. So you had like a 250 horsepower car beating a pista, 600 odd horsepower pista, because the driver was better and got off the line quicker and changed gear better.
Yeah.
And people hated it. You idiots. We want to know what the drag times are. You idiot. You don't know what you're doing. So we end up pulling a load of the videos. They'll probably be good on Facebook. We've got a Facebook page that's got 1.4 million people. And bizarrely, we get more views on there than we do on YouTube anyway. But
does that pay
drag races?
Pay revenue now?
More than YouTube, actually. Yeah, nice. They're it's an interesting platform. But now Twitter as well, X, they're paying people.
Are they? Do you sign up for that? How does that work?
We didn't even bother. We got 13,000 people, which is great on Twitter. But if you put a picture on Instagram or a video on Instagram, you're going to get hundreds or thousands of likes. If you put something on Twitter and you get 100 likes, like, wow, it's doing really well.
It's not the platform. It's quite not working.
Quite a bit of negativity, but that's social media in general, isn't it? It's nice people have a place to go and voice their opinions, but sometimes people should perhaps think about what they're saying. But we laugh about it. If we get negative stuff, Tiff and I laugh about it. They'll say his teeth are too yellow and mine are too white. And you just think, well, what do you want? What do you want? But we just laugh at negativity, really. But
yeah. Has that been, have you sort of adopted that stance over time, or have you been through a little bit of a journey on it?
No, I think everybody, to start off with, when you put yourself out there on social media, you think, oh, that's a bit rude. Oh, hey, yeah. Why are they saying that? And I think everybody is a bit shocked at first, but then very quickly you realize, and especially the bigger guys, and when they're making loads of money. Look at Tim Schmee. He gets so much stick, but he is phenomenal. He's phenomenal. His knowledge and his ethic and work ethic and is phenomenal. So, and it's easy to knock somebody. You can be negative about anything you can be negative about if you're that way inclined. But don't be negative. Try and take a positive out of it, because this guy's giving you amazing content, unique content. And I just think if people had that shift in their life and their attitude, instead of picking faults, because you can pick faults in anything.
Yeah, you can.
But just turn it around into a positive, or just keep your mouth shut for 5 minutes and just move on to the next thing. You don't. And if you're negative, what type of attitude are you going to have in your life? What type of person are you going to be in your life? It's not good. It's not good for your stress. It's not good for anything. Try and be positive. Try and be encourage and motivate. That for me is what life's all about. Being a positive person.
Yeah, yeah. And the pressure that comes with posting on social media and whether it gets likes or not likes, or if people, you know, are not very nice in the comments and stuff. I think for a lot of creators, one, that is an absolute nightmare. But it really like stops the creativity, because you're like, I want to try this new stuff. And in reality, getting to where I got now or progressing is you've got to keep trying the things and doing the stuff, and it's not always going to work and it's not always going to think, but you're trying. And I think for a lot of people, it can like be this sort of mounting wall that sort of slowly sort of kills you over time, and you're just keep pushing forward. So for you guys, well done for keep going, keep trying the different stuff. It's really cool to see, you know, the TV series, and then now the TV series on Prime, which comes out tomorrow. I think it's the 15th today.
Friday 16th. Don't know what time, because we don't know whether it's GMT or we speak to these guys, speak to them regularly, but they don't give you the details that you may need sometimes as to what time, but I don't know. But it's Friday 16th anyway. And you're right, but the amount of times I've gone to post something on social media to try and get my channel sort of active and stuff, because I just don't use it. And you know, you need to use social media to get lots of likes and come up on the algorithms. And I'll write it and I'll post it, and I think, oh, that's a really nice post. And I think, nah, I'm not going to post that. What will people think, or what? And I don't want people to say, oh, you know, look at him, he's here and he's doing this and he's doing that. And so you're right. You're absolutely right. It does affect you, and it shouldn't. You should just be yourself. And I always wanted, just on my own personal accounts, wanted just to be myself, but it doesn't work that way. You end up being a little bit corporate and protective.
Yeah, and then you post less, and you post less interesting stuff. I 100% do that. Like, I don't post very much on my Instagram account, and because of that,
I'm aware
it's boring.
Because that's what I would want to see of you.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's tricky, isn't it? It's a tricky one.
I was just going to say, on Instagram is a funny one, because I put car content on. I used to get lots of likes back in the day. I used to get 5,000 on a picture, no problem at all. And now I'm lucky if I get 500. But I put a video on of me. We're filming a car in Cinque Terre in Italy. And my hotel room was the most bizarre thing. You check in at the bottom of the road in the town square in the bar, and they give you the key, and you walk up these stairs, like 100-odd stairs, and you get to your room at the top. And I put that on Instagram just for a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And it's had, I think, 8 million views.
What?
And I know. I pinned it at the top of my Instagram, 8 million views, and it was just literally, I had to put some Italian, I didn't do it, one of my editors put some Italian music over it and sped it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because the reason the Italian music's gone it, because you literally just hear me going, I was knackered by the top, and I had 8 million views. And yet you put something really cool on of a car, you think, oh, this is amazing. People are really going to want to see this. Like, nah.
Yeah.
Which maybe shows the type of audience I've got on my personal channel. Maybe I need to do more personal stuff and less car
and
stuff.
Fun. I think videos, I realize from my own sort of consumption on Instagram now, I end up watching lots of reels and stuff. It seems to be where you end up doing. And actually, funny, engaging short videos are significantly more engaging than a photo. Like, it's just especially as a photographer, that's a really unfortunate sort of reality. But it is the reality. So I'm now like, okay, I've got to somehow start creating interesting little videos. But you're like, I don't know where, like, I sort of know where to start, but I don't know. And then I don't want to just post like duff content. So it's a tricky one. But then
I quite like stories on Instagram, because you can hide a little bit and it's not on your main post, and you know it's going to be gone in 24 hours. I was on a flight, as I said yesterday, and I put a picture on my Valentine's card. I put the card you get, the safety card.
Yeah.
I said, here's my Valentine's card. And oh my goodness, I only get a few thousand views on a story anyway nowadays. But the amount of people that reacted on it, it's just nuts. Completely different to if I put something on of a car. Yeah. It was just in spur of the moment. Oh, Valentine's. All I could see was Valentine's. Well, here's my Valentine's card. and it's gone nuts, but there's no rhyme or reason. So, there we go. We both got to maybe mix it up a little bit don't worry about what other people think.
If you find it funny or interesting, maybe other people will. try not to over productionize your personal Instagram.
We're both agreeing to this and convincing ourselves, we'll and then see. We'll get on our Instagrams and
I'll be getting the gimbal out
for the next 6 months.
Yeah. Right. Well, I normally wrap these up with five questions. Do you have a most memorable driving trip or journey?
Honestly, that Lamborghini thing was amazing. Lots of the Pagani stuff back in the day when Pagani first launched. Some of the trips we did with those were very special. But that Lamborghini trip in November was amazing through Tuscany.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. If you're going to drive one car for the rest of your life, and you get a £500 banger on the side, what? Let's say £1,000 inflation. What would it be?
I can't tell you because your audience will hate me.
We've had all sorts of answers to this question.
I love SUVs and people can't stand them, but I would probably get, I like RS6 Performance, something like that.
That's not an SUV, powerful
estate car. People won't hate me for that, but they would if I said Urus or,
that's all right.
Something to appease my son, my 12-year-old son, like a G63 or something. But yeah, I like sports cars. I'd love to get a 812 Competizione or something like that. V12, naturally aspirated. Unbelievable.
Do you know when the launch or the launch stuff is for the next, the successor to the 812? Do you know when any of the press drives are or anything like that? I've no idea. No. I feel like it's this year. Or at least some drives will happen this year. It's sort of mental how that's. It's just like the 812 is a nuts car. I mean, the F12 was a nuts car. The 812 is a nuts car. Like, how does it just keeps going?
How do they keep raising the bar? Ferrari make phenomenal cars.
They do. And they are a phenomenal business, which when you look at all of the other supercar manufacturers, Lamborghini actually is doing really well, seems to be doing really well at the moment. But you look at Ferrari and go, like, they just nail it. They just nail it.
But, the, you know, 7 year, what is it, 5 year warranty, 7 year service plan? But that was
a good idea.
But it was an amazing idea. But the cars are so reliable. So you've got a sports car that can do 0 to 62 in 3 seconds, and they're giving you a 5 year warranty on it. Like a day or something. Just incredible.
Well, and then when you think about, let's say, your 812, and this wasn't around when they first started doing these 7 year warranties, if it's still that, and a five year service plan, 7 year warranty, I think that's what it is. If you think about what a service actually costs, it's like changing the oil, changing some stuff, etc. Like, it's not very much money. In terms of the amount people might spec on their 812. Like, they could easily do, you can easily do like $100,000 of options. You're like, well, that's covered your servicing. Yep. Like, it's 10 times the amount of your servicing. But it did bring
$100,000 worth of options in the engine bay alone.
Yeah, exactly.
What's all that about?
It's insane. It's insane. Right. Most undervalued car at the moment. What do you think should be worth more?
Taycan. If you're going to go electric, I think the Taycan is phenomenal. I think they're super value at the moment, as is all electric. I don't like electric.
We were looking
yesterday. There's a place for it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. What place? What do you think is the place for electric?
Well, if you've got a regular sort of routine and you want to use it, or you've got a second car, and you can charge from home, but it's just it's expensive. It's if you're out on the road. It's not very, it doesn't allow the flexibility that I want in my life personally.
Yeah. Well, if you like doing really long drives, it's doable. I'm quite a big EV fan in the right scenario. So it's definitely doable. But if you like, for example, often do lots and lots and lots of miles, if you're not in, I think it's still safe to say if you're not in a Tesla, it's a bit hit and miss. It's not that easy. And you may not want to be in a Tesla, for example. You might want to be in a Porsche Taycan, of which we were looking yesterday. There's something like 730. I think it was 727 Taycans for sale yesterday.
Incredible. So yeah, I think they're good value, and I think it's a phenomenal car. You're electric.
I think, and we have a little electric car that we use, a little Peugeot, and it's great. But we charge at home, and we never. I generally try and avoid taking it out of its full range, and it's absolutely amazing for that job. Like,
yeah,
we use it all the time.
Yep.
And the new Taycan, which was announced last week, sounds like it's still going to... The problem is all the incentives are for people that have got businesses and that sort of thing. So loads of people went and bought Taycan Turbo S's, which in theory, if you think about that, it's like the equivalent of buying an E63 or... Yeah. Or an S63. If you look at those cars historically, those cars have always lost value. Like,
yeah,
you're always going to lose big money on the big engine thing. And with EVs, there are no advantages to buying secondhand. Like, as a private buyer, there's zero. So everyone bought the Turbo S for 100 and something grand, wrote off a ton of the value through a business before tax, but there's no buyers for them. Because they were all, everyone, or the only people that would buy that car would buy it new. So now you can get a Taycan Turbo S for, I don't know, 70 grand or something that's done about 4 miles.
150 grand new?
Yeah, that sort of money. Insane. Insane.
Crazy. Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see. I'm interested to see how it's going to evolve. Even like the new Taycan sounds like it's done... helped with a lot of the problems with the original one. For example, like the range. The range is just not great. And it sounds like the new one's much better in that regard, but I don't know.
Well, you know it's going to improve. It's all relatively new technology, certainly in terms of the automotive world. But I just wish they gave manufacturers freedom to create carbon neutral cars without saying they have to go down this route. I just wish... You know, you've got some of the best technologies and brains, and you, I know on your podcast you had the synthetic fuel guy on there.
Yeah.
But there's so many different, and I believe better options than just going all electric. And there is a place for electric. You just nailed it with your little Peugeot. But for me, they're fundamentally wrong that pushing this mandate that everybody has to go electric, not just in the UK, you know, all over the world. It's wrong. It really is wrong. We should allow creativity. We shouldn't suppress these amazing human brains or these people all over the world that could potentially come up with something bigger, better. But now they can't because now they're forced down this road. It's wrong.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to be a mix, isn't it? Whatever the solution is. And I would love to have seen like an emissions reduction as the sort of one of the tasks. I know now dealerships have to sell an increasing percentage of EVs, which sounds horrific for the dealerships. It's like, I don't know what the percentage is. Let's say this year it's 15% of sales have to be EVs. Next year it has to be 20%. Then it has to be 25. And the reality is at the moment, the consumers, some people want to buy EVs and it works and the technology's there, but we know the technology changes so fast that if you bought a car in 2 years, it's going to be probably significantly better than the one you can buy now. So why would you do that?
It's just so bloody expensive. You know, you buy an entry-level little car. What was your Peugeot? How much that cost for a little?
I think new, it was like 32. I bought it 1 year old for 22.
Okay.
So, and I think there's value in that sort of part of the market. There's loads of Teslas. Model 3s, you can get them. Like, you can get a reasonable car, like a good car that is cheap to run for not like crazy money. But when you start looking at the top, Audi Q e-tron or Taycan or whatever, any of these cars that are like 100 grand.
EQS, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And then now they're just not
Spectre
worth
for 500 grand.
Spectre for 500 grand, yeah.
That's a different proposition.
That is the business purchase right there. But there are going to be deals. Yeah, if there's 700 Taycans for sale now and you can get the cheapest one, it's like 50 grand for a, I don't even know what it would have been new, 100 and something. in a year's time, especially after the new ones come out, like, can you buy a nice Taycan for that's like 2 years old for like 40 grand? Probably. That's a really nice car.
Yeah, it is. Beautiful.
So anyway, there's a get on something else. Most interesting car to you at the moment? What are you Googling? What are you looking up? What are you watching videos on?
I mainly Google stuff with my son, who I should mention was 12. I mainly Google stuff with him. That, what about this, Dad? What about that? And lots of Lamborghinis at the moment for him. Honestly, I've got such a broad view of cars that I haven't really got one that I'm particularly interested or would spend lots of time on.
Yeah. What's he interested in? And is it similar to his sort of age group, his views?
Yeah, G63. They all want a G63.
Interesting. So why is that?
He's very good. I don't know. I think they've just done a brilliant job of, I guess they're in music videos and stuff.
Yeah,
driven. He's a good little driver. He's only 12, but he can drive manual and driven loads of cars over 100 miles an hour, including the G63. So he's quite lucky. And again, back to this thing about, okay, so I might not have loads of cars in the garage and have a private jet or a big house, but I've done all these amazing things. So, and that's one of the things I've been lucky enough to do with my son as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And most of those cars, for example, the G63, like if you can borrow one for a week, you get to experience all of the delights of a G63 without the any downsides or whatever. And then you get to,
well, the downside is you've got to go to a petrol station a lot, and it costs you money to put fuel in because they're bloody awful on fuel.
Yeah.
But it's not too bad when you don't have any of the depreciation and it comes with a tank of fuel. So it's not too bad. You shouldn't complain.
It is interesting looking at sort of younger generations. And I've now got a 2-year-old, and I sort of wonder, what is he going to be remotely interested in cars? What is the future of sort of young enthusiasts? I don't know.
Well, the future's electric, because by the time they come to drive, there's going to be no internal combustion engine. It's harrowing. It's awful. So kids like him, my son, who's a petrol head, who loves to drive, learned to drive a manual when he was 8 or 9.
Yeah.
He's not going to have that. He's not. My daughter's just passed her test last week. She passed it first time, 17, nice. Just turned 17. And she wanted to get an automatic car. I said, no, you're not getting an automatic. You're going to get a manual car. No, I want to get an automatic. I said, no, I want you to learn how to drive a manual car. It's going to be a dying art. It really upsets me that you know, to have a little, have, you know, your first car, I don't know what yours was. Mine was an old Mini.
Yeah,
1967 Mini, but because I am old as well. But your first car, you know, you're going through the gears and whatever it is.
100%.
It's not going to happen anymore.
There's a lot of joy and involvement in doing that, isn't it? My wife went up to Edinburgh at the weekend and rented a. It's like, I think she got a Fiat 500. It was a manual, like whatever the lowest spec engine, and it was like, I don't know, 30 quid for 2 days or something. And she came and she came back and she was like, I said, it took me so much time to work out like how that particular engine worked, what gear, like when do I change, trying to making it smooth. And then she was also like, and I realized what nice cars we have at home. I was like, thank you. Yes, we do.
But Sam, don't you think if you do drive a manual and you're brought up to drive a manual, don't you think that's going to teach you more about a car anyway? It's going to teach you how things work. And I know electric cars are going to be so different. You're not even going to have to worry about gears. But just to understand, I've got, because I come from that era, generation where you had to have mechanical sympathy. You had to understand about changing gears and clutches and all this sort of stuff. So I think it teaches you how to drive a car as well. It teaches you more about the car. It makes you a better driver as well.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think for your general mass market, it doesn't matter, does it? An electric's probably better. The electric is better for general mass market transport. Like, it's going to be simpler. You don't have to warm it up, all that sort of stuff. But I'm hoping we're still going to be able to drive our old bangers, which at that point could even be a 992 GT3 RS will be an old banger by the time we're, you know, at this point in time. But maybe we'll be getting cans of synthetic fuel delivered. I don't know how it's going to work.
Well, surely this time, 20 years, we're going to be having flying cars and...
Maybe self-driving and all this sort of stuff. I think we'll be jumping on a little, maybe it's an electric plane, and we'll be dropping into Italy in the mountains, and someone will be like, here's your Lamborghini. We've given you 400 miles of fuel. Off you go. And you're like, yes.
We joke about the electric, well, I don't know whether we were joking about the electric planes, but I'm going on Saturday, I'm going to Dunsford Airport, which is near Exeter, near Honiton.
Yeah.
And they've got a press day for electric planes. So my friends run that airport. We used to use that runway for drag races. So they've got a load of electric planes. I don't think I'm going to go up in one. I'll wait a couple of years, I think.
I think
they're not the best flyer at the best of times.
I think at the moment, I believe they've got small sort of like private-y kind of like two, four seats with relatively short range.
Yeah, exactly.
And then if you come across these VTOL,
they're going to be super reliable.
They will be super reliable. Like when you think about like helicopters, for example, and I know people have seen these like drone helicopter plane things, vertical takeoff landing, basically looks like a drone. Initially, I was like, that sounds really sketchy. And then I realized and I remembered what's involved in a helicopter. And you're like, it's a motor and then a bunch of gearboxes and then this rotating thing. Whereas, and any part of that fails, you fall out of the sky. Not quite, but pretty much like, and they do fall out of the sky. Yeah. Whereas like a bunch of batteries and four motors, it's a very simple mechanism. Actually, they should be pretty safe.
Yeah. Just a bit heavy at the moment.
They're a bit heavy. But yeah, it'd be interesting that, isn't it? Where if the idea of you're in central London and you go to like a little sort of heliport type place and you just jump in a little electric taxi helicopter that takes you to the airport or something in 5 minutes because it can go in a straight line and it shouldn't cost very much. That is an interesting proposition. Like, will we be at that in 10 years' time? I don't know.
I like your thinking. Yeah, I'm not quite as optimistic on that one.
I don't know. Lots of people are spending a lot of money on it, but lots of people spend a lot of money on AI driving, and we're a long way away from that. Right. Final question. 5-car garage, unlimited value. It's got to fit into your life. So we know you've got a...
Oh, we need another podcast for that.
You've got your Lamborghini, what's his name? Performante. SUV, surely that's in there.
Well, it's a phenomenal car. It's very garish. It was super garish, and I don't think I could carry it off personally. But 5-car, that's a whole nother podcast. We could talk about that for a whole nother podcast you've got the McLaren F1, phenomenal and beautiful, incredible engineering. But then you've got Zondas, you've got old classic Ferraris. The thing is, with classic cars, every time you see them, you think, wow, it's amazing. I want some of that. You drive it for 10 miles, think, oh, please give me some nice air conditioning and good brakes. Yeah. And I can't answer that.
You've got to answer it for now, and this is not binding. Because mine genuinely changes hour by hour. Every time someone does this, I have a little ponder of what mine would be.
I've got lists all over my house. I genuinely have lists on my phone, on my house, with my son. We play games. We design cars off the internet. We are on the different configurators. So you're talking to a world expert.
Come on.
A world expert, but I can't commit to 5 cars.
Give me one. Give me one.
Zonda. So I would probably have a Zonda. It'd have to be some sort of 760 or Cinque or something, an F at the least. I like V12s. I think the 812 competition only is incredible. I'd probably have a Yaris GRM or something, just that you'd have to have a little fun car that you can jump in. I mentioned the RS6 performance, I think, is the ultimate daily if you could only have one car.
So you got one more.
Then you want an SUV, you want something big and prestigious. Maybe you wouldn't, but in my life, so as garish as it is, I would probably get the Urus Performante, but I'd have a very subtle color, so you wouldn't know it was a Urus Performante. So there's your five. But that was under pressure. That was under a lot of duress
fair
to
enough.
Give you that. So.
The Urus is a really interesting one because I look at them and I go, they are like, they're so in your face. They're so sort of garish. But then the person in me that knows a lot about cars and also about prices knows that a Urus has been an incredible purchase for the last, but since it came out, they just don't lose money. Like at all.
They've just dropped now. Just started dropping now, but they've been incredibly good news if you ever bought a Urus. So you have free motoring for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's Lucky Supercars. I don't know whether you know him on Instagram. I'm a good mate of mine. I'm popping down there this evening with my son. He's got the grand design, they call it the Exeter Shard. It's this weird and wonderful sort of house that he's had. He's got a Urus, and it's a hell of a bit of kit. It's a beautiful bit of kit. So, and they how they drive and how they sound. It drives like a car. It drives like a sports car.
Apart from its whatever two and a something tons.
But you wouldn't know that if you're blindfolded and you didn't know how high you were. You wouldn't know that because it's got the active air suspension. So you go around a corner and then it pushes you the other way. And but it's a nice bit of kit, but very garish. And I get people are going to be throwing things at your speakers and stuff now, listening to this, saying, "Who is this guy?"
It's all right. I think we all have this like, what would you drive if no one could see you driving it? I definitely have like if
that's a good one.
Like, what would you drive? No one sees drive. I think day to day, there's a possibility that I would be in a Rolls, like I don't know, one of the big ones, like a Phantom or something. Nah. If no one could see me, that they didn't even know I turned
but
up.
Why
in it.
Would you choose to drive a car that drives like a boat? Why?
Down a motorway. I just wanted like a
down
ghost
a
or something.
Great, yeah.
Just down the most of my driving now is like a bit of town motorway, and then I'm somewhere else where there's other interesting cars. And I could see, I'm like, I'm not there yet. I've not reached that point in my life, whether it's like financially or like age wise, where I've gone, I would feel comfortable driving around in a Rolls Royce.
There is no question at all. If I won 100 million on the Euro Millions lottery, I'd prefer to have an RS6 Performance over a Rolls Royce Ghost. Black badge, and I the car's phenomenal, but I just don't want to be that. Again, it's there's a lot of pressure when you're driving a car like that because it's look at me, you know, look. And that's not what I want a car. I want a car because I enjoy driving the car.
Yeah, which is why there would have to be a cloak around the whole thing, and no one ever knew I was driving.
Visibility.
But you remove that, and I'm like, oh no, I'm in something else. I'm in something else because all of these other factors. Anyway. Well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, we didn't really talk. Yeah, we did talk about the show, but February the 16th, Friday.
February the 16th.
Prime Video.
This will be out. It will be out by the time, when this comes out, you can head over to Prime, check out the show. It looks like a lot of fun. You guys
People need to do a podcast on you because I know lots of things about you. Or I know things about you, so you've had amazing car history, but I would like to do this the other way around and ask you some questions because you're a very interesting chap. So
we can have a chat next time we see each other.
Perfect. Look forward to it.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.